This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So just to a brief review of what constitutes a task C or task D lesion. Hopefully you can read this all in the back there in terms of the definition of a task C lesion. The most severe of which is bilateral common iliac artery occlusions. And the task consensus recommendation for treatment of this lesion is open surgery for a good risk patient. However, if the patient has significant comorbidities and the operator has a high success rate, then you could consider endovascular treatment. For the more severe task D lesions, as illustrated here, the consensus is that open surgery is treatment of choice for a type D lesion. So why are then we talking about endovascular treatment of task C and task D lesions if the recommendations are to approach these with an open surgical approach? Well, I think that the arguments are that you can achieve a high technical success rate in treating these lesions with a very modest morbidity. As we've alluded to in the first morning session, there are always evolution of endovascular techniques. Things are getting easier. Technologies are getting better. And people are getting more experienced with using these devices. Another argument is that when this technique does fail, reinterventions can be done percutaneously, and that the secondary patency rates are actually comparable to open surgery. And finally, if you fail by approaching these lesions with an endovascular first approach, that person is usually still a candidate for conventional surgical therapy. So if your initial outcome doesn't meet your expectations, not much is lost. I think if you're going to tackle these advanced aortoiliac lesions, you have to be prepared to approach these from any number of access sites. Usually one arm and two groins, I think, will be prepped. I think the most common approach is to attack this through an ipsilateral retrograde approach, but I would say that probably in about 50 or 60% of those cases, you're going to need to either get bilateral femoral access or additionally brachial access. And, you know, most of these techniques most of these lesions can still be treated using a subintimal angioplasty technique, I would say probably 60 to 70%, and the rest of the time reentry devices or CTO devices will be needed. The potential complications: vessel wall perforation, dissection, avulsion of the vessel from the aorta, embolization, and then access site complications are fairly frequently encountered with these tough-to-treat lesions, and I think you have to be prepared in terms of your stock, your armamentarium of things to treat these complications with. So this is a case, a fairly straightforward case, a chronic left common iliac artery occlusion. Because there is a stump of the proximal left common iliac artery, this was initially approached through a right femoral approach. You can see here, initially, we were unable to cross from a right femoral approach, so we obtained left femoral artery access under ultrasound guidance. With a Compy catheter and glide wire, we were in a subintimal plane and could not get back into the true lumen despite multiple attempts. And this is what we found. And, you know, when you see this, I mean, I immediately get nervous. I don't like to make, you know, a big dissection plane in the aorta. And, you know, I think most people would quit potentially at this point and say it's not doable. But I do think it just depends on how hard you want to try. Most of these lesions can be treated successfully. A reentry device was used in this case, allowing successful entry into the aortic true lumen. Balloon expandable kissing stents were then placed into the common iliac arteries and an additional self-expanding stent into the left common iliac artery with a pretty good result. Here's another case. This is an obese woman with lots of medical comorbidities and a colostomy. You can see here she has bilateral iliac artery occlusions, a right common iliac and a left external iliac occlusion, and also bilateral SFA occlusions. She was referred over to us because she had an unsuccessful attempt at recanalizing the iliac arteries through a femoral approach, and so this was attempted through left brachial access as a start, and we could not cross this lesion from a left brachial approach. So then combined left brachial and right femoral access was tried. Again, we were in a subintimal plane and unable to enter the true lumen. And so a reentry catheter was successfully used from the right femoral approach and gained access into the true lumen. And here you see we're all set up to place stents into the iliac arteries. So kissing ICAST covered stents were placed into the iliac arteries, the common iliac arteries, and then a wall stent was placed into the right external iliac artery. And here you see here there's obviously a rupture in the right common iliac artery, and this was treated by placement of a covered stent. So I think for endovascular treatment of advanced aortoiliac artery disease, it's not really a question of can we do it, but really should we be doing it. So in the next few slides, I'm going to present the data that are available that specifically reviews outcomes for these advanced lesions. None of these are randomized trials. They consist of a systemic review, a meta-analysis, and then a large case series, but it's the best that we have so far. So this is a systematic review that was published in 2010. It consists of 19 non-randomized studies with over 1,700 patients, 1,300 of whom had extensive aortoiliac occlusive disease, so 1,300 patients with type C or D lesions. These are all single-center results, all retrospective analyses, and all tertiary care referral centers. In terms of the technical success rates, they're pretty good. So in all of the studies, they were reported, and they ranged between 86 to 100%. Obviously, there was a lot of heterogeneity within each of these studies that we couldn't control for. The most common reasons for technical failure were inability to cross the occluded segment, thrombosis after recanalization, and iliac artery rupture. There was zero perioperative and 30-day mortality in 12 of these studies, and in the other seven studies, the mortality rate ranged from 1% to 6.7%. What about primary patency? 1-year primary patency, you can see on the left hand of the slide, 70 to 97%. 1-year secondary patency was better at 88 to 100%. And then there are only a few studies that followed these patients long enough to gain 4 or 5 year patency data. The primary patency rate in those studies after 4 to 5 years was 60 to 86%, and a secondary patency rate at the 5 year mark of 80 to 98%. This was another meta-analysis that was published just within months after that first study that I mentioned. I think that the analysis was obviously, the question was being asked simultaneously, and this was just published a little bit later. And basically, it was asking the same question, but with fairly, you know, different inclusion and exclusion criteria. So this meta-analysis included 16 articles with nearly 1,000 patients with TAS-C or TAS-D aortoiliac lesions that were treated with endovascular therapy. And just to give you a sense with the overlap, 8 of these 16 articles were included in the previous systemic review that I just presented. They had to have a minimum of 10 cases per study and had to report data on immediate technical success and primary patency. And when they looked at the pooled estimate for technical success in these 16 studies, they found this to be 93% with a primary patency of 89% at 12 months. And here you see when they broke it down by task subtype and whether a policy of primary or selective stenting was used, the technical success was slightly better in the TASC-C lesions compared to the TASC-D lesions, and slightly better in when they did primary stenting versus selective stenting, but these results were not statistically significantly different. Similarly, for 12-month primary patency, slightly better for the TASC-C lesions, but not significantly different. And again, the primary stenting group fared better in terms of 1-year primary patency compared to the selective stented group, but again, not significantly different. And not to be outdone, this was the most recent case series that was published. A subset of their results were included in the two analyses just mentioned. I think they... They basically looked over this time period to identify 1,712 procedures. If you note, the biggest series to date was 17 and 11 case cases, and so I think they stopped after they got more than that last systematic review. So anyways, it was in 1,184 patients, and it was specifically lesions in the distal aorta and iliac arteries. Their primary endpoint was one-year duplex-based primary patency and with the secondary endpoints. And what they found was their 30-day mortality was about 1%. They had a mean follow-up of a little over 3 years. They found no difference in their 12- and 24-month restenosis rates or in their primary and secondary patency rates. And it didn't differ among the different task subgroups. They also looked to see whether complex interventions in the distal aorta or the aortic bifurcation differed between the overall cohort and found that those outcomes were no different. The only thing that they did see was when they looked at a combined outcome of freedom from restenosis, amputation, or surgery. Those who had task A and B lesions did slightly better compared to those with task C and D lesions, and this finding was statistically significant. So, you know, all of these studies, they span quite a long period of time. They start back in the 90s. They end in the mid-2000s. They used a variety of stents. Actually, in that last series, a lot of the task D lesions were treated with self-expanding stents. And so you might ask, well, maybe, again, we are lagging in terms of technology, and would a covered stent be better in this location and yield better patency results than bare metal stents? The benefit of covered stents include a reduction in intimal hyperplasia. There's also a thought that maybe they're less thrombogenic than a bare metal stent. And there are numerous small case series that demonstrate promising results. There's only one randomized trial, the COBEST trial, which was performed in Australia, the covered versus balloon expandable stent trial. And in this series, 168 iliac arteries in 125 patients with task B, C, and D lesions were randomly assigned to a covered balloon expandable stent versus a bare balloon expandable stent. And they followed these patients for up to 18 months. And here you can see that in terms of the freedom from binary restenosis, there was a significantly different outcome between the covered stent versus the bare stent, and this favored the covered stent. When you looked at freedom from stent occlusion, although there was a trend towards the covered stent having better results, it was not significantly different. They then looked at freedom from binary restenosis based on task group, and I apologize, there is, I think, a typo in the syllabus. I think I wrote in there that there were more task D lesions in the bare stent group. It's actually there are more task D lesions in the covered stent group. So when you look at freedom from binary restenosis in these subgroups, actually the task C and D group, there was a significant benefit in those who received a covered stent compared to those who received a bare metal stent, and that difference was not seen in the task B group. So I think it's promising. I think that it makes sense to use covered stents to treat these lesions. There's another randomized trial that's currently underway in the Dutch iliac stent trial, or the DISCOVER trial, and it's basically the same study as COBEST. Probably more patients will be enrolled, I think, in this study, but it's using the same covered stent, the Advanta V12 PTFE covered stent. And in both of these trials, they're going to be randomized to a balloon expandable uncovered stent. So there's no single uncovered stent that's going to be used in either of these trials because there are several that are available for treatment. So should we be treating these extensive aorta-iliac occlusive disease lesions with endovascular therapy first, or should we stick with the consensus guidelines that task C and D should be approached with an open surgical approach? In terms of the comparison of techniques, we don't have any head-to-head comparison. We can only, you know, present what we know based on non-randomized studies that look at both of these separately. I think that with open surgery, the studies have shown that there's a higher mortality than with endovascular repair for these lesions, and that there is higher morbidity, which is more significant. Open surgery, though, hands down, still wins the primary patency argument. Primary patency At 1 year, at 5 years, at 10 years is better than endovascular repair. However, I think that this may change with regular use of covered stents. We still don't have very long follow-up with the endovascularly treated patients. I think that the secondary patency is actually close in the endovascular repair group when you compare it to open surgery. Definitely decreased length of stay. And when you think about, you know, how to treat these patients, with open surgery, usually you're limited by physiology, whereas in endovascular repair, usually it's a limitation by the anatomical constraints of the lesion. So in summary, I think that most TAS-C and D lesions can be successfully treated. I would say that probably over 90% can be treated. It depends on how hard you want to work and what potential complications you're willing to, you know, live through and treat. I would say that you would liberally use covered stents in this in treating this disease, especially with difficult cases and long segment occlusions. And, you know, be prepared for complications. It's usually going to be a rupture or dissection. And as I said before, I think the long-term patency may improve with regular use of covered stents. So I would say that if you do these therapies regularly, you have a high success rate and you have a patient with significant comorbidities. I don't think an endovascular first approach is the wrong approach. I think that the data that we have available, although it's not level one data, would support this approach. I think that a juxtarenal aortic occlusion probably is the TAS-D lesion that you don't want to treat with an endovascular first approach. But short of that, I don't think that there's any pure anatomic limitations. Obviously, open surgery is still robust, a great treatment with excellent primary patency, and in the good-risk young patient should be the first approach for these types of lesions. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.